We tell our kids, listen, our marriage is the sun. You are the planets. You orbit us. We don't orbit you. This is not a child-centric home, which means that we're going to take time away from you. We're going to take time apart from you. At the end of the day, we don't want to see you. We love you, but we want to see each other.
A successful marriage takes a lot. It takes cooperation, patience, realistic expectations, some give and take. Honestly, it takes work. Greg Smalley is about 3 decades into his marriage to his wife, Erin. And even though he serves as the vice president of marriage for Focus on the Family, he'll be the first to tell you he still has plenty to learn. Today, we get the pleasure of sitting down for a conversation with Greg Smalley and gleaning from his decades of experience and wisdom. We hope you enjoyed this conversation with Greg Smalley.
Well, Greg, welcome back to the morning conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So you serve as the Focus on the Family Vice President of Marriage. That's kind of a cool title.
it's a cool title, but it does put a little pressure on my 30-year marriage.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So what does the Vice President of Marriage for Focus on the Family do? Give us a little thumbnail sketch of your world.
Yeah. The biggest things that we're trying to do is we want to help couples really honor their marriage. I love the verse that in Hebrews, marriage should be honored by all. And so how do we help couples honor their marriage? And we believe what that looks like is that you keep growing closer to the Lord. So first and foremost, he has to be our cornerstone of our marriage. And then we do things proactively to keep our marriage strong, but then we invest in other couples. And so it's great if my marriage is growing, that's wonderful. But boy, I always think about the Dead Sea, the Jordan River flows into the Dead Sea, but nothing flows out. And I don't believe that that's what God desires for our lives, for our marriage. I mean, he blesses us that Jordan River flowing in. But we've got to be pouring out. So that's why I think honoring marriage is not only drawing close to him and keeping your marriage strong, but it's investing in the lives of other couples. So really, that's the essence of what we're trying to do. So we create content and events and resources and podcasts and you name it to kind of help couples accomplish those 3 things.
Yeah. It's interesting, Greg, as you were talking there, because something that hit me a number of years ago when I was working with youth, actually, but it applies to all of us. And it's interesting. You just applied it to marriage. And that is, when we first come to know Christ, we dive into the Word and we're Bible studies, we're reading books, we're going to church service, and we're growing, right? Yeah. And then we kind of hit a plateau. We're like, man, we're not moving forward like we did before. And so we go, well, I need to read another book. I need to go do another Bible study. But one of the things I've realized over time was there comes a point in your spiritual journey when you've got to shift from getting to giving. And so that pathway forward stops being from getting, and the substantial growth forward from that point becomes giving. And I'm hearing you say that same thing about marriage. Like, yeah, you take in your marriage, but at some point, like, your marriage needs to be a blessing to others, and you're able to see yourself move forward in your own marriage.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that verse in 2 Corinthians that says, because God has comforted us, we should then comfort others. Yes. And again, that certainly can apply to marriage. And Erin and I have been the beneficiaries of that over the years. I remember one of my favorite examples of how couples have poured into our marriage is when I was getting my doctorate, and that was stressful enough, but we had a 3-month-old. Erin was working full time as a labor and delivery nurse. I mean, we just had a lot going on.
Yeah.
Very disconnected, very exhausted and worn out. And a couple must have looked at us at church and kind of went, they don't look like they're doing well. And we get a knock on our little apartment door a couple of days later. I open it. I'm looking at this older couple going, they kind of look familiar, but I was like, can I help you? And the guy kind of holds out this $20 bill. Huh. And all he says to me is, we're here for your daughter, Taylor. like in such a way that my first thought was, did my wife just sell our daughter for $20? I felt like I could get a better deal if that was the goal. But honestly, what this couple started doing, seriously, every week they would ride their bikes over to our little apartment in Southern California. I was at Biola University, and they would hand us a $20 bill. They would watch our daughter Taylor. And then Aaron and I would go on a date. We'd go to Red Robin, which was close. We'd get a burger, and then we would have quarters and we'd play Miss Pac-Man. And so we would talk and connect. We'd play and have fun. And I'm telling you that 30 years now, looking back, they're an important part of our love story. I don't think we'd be where we're at today if they hadn't made that investment. Wow. So that I think that's the power of going, how can we use our marriage, like you said, to bless others?
Wow. What a great story. How simple. Like, who couldn't do that? Like, who couldn't, right. You know? Yeah, that's awesome. I'm inspired. Like, seriously, seriously. So talk to us about when this passion in you for helping build healthy marriages begin. Like, I mean, you could have done a lot of things with your life. You've chosen to invest it in marriages. Where'd that come from?
Yeah. So I grew up in the home of a guy named Gary Smalley, who some will remember his name. Yeah. He went to be with the Lord about 6 years ago, but he was really the first kind of marriage guru in teaching conferences and writing books. And so just growing up in this home of his, to where, you know, I'd get to go and watch him speak at events, and people would come up and, you know, thank us as kids, going, thanks for sharing, your daddy saved our marriage. And, you know, as a young person, it didn't quite make sense. I'm like, what is he doing? Like, he lectures at me for free. Like, I don't even want to hear that. Like, what is he saying to these people? It's so helpful. And yet, as I got older, and actually, I mean, he never put pressure. I mean, I wanted to be a lawyer. I was headed to law school, and just God got me. And I ended up at Denver Seminary and ended up in their counseling program and loved it, and said, man, I want to do this for the rest of my life. And so obviously he had already opened so many doors. And so I got to walk through a lot of those because of him. But here I am at Focus on the Family, you know, get to run and give leadership to their marriage department here, and been doing that for about 11 years and just absolutely love it. And get to work with my wife. She was a nurse for a number of years, but now she has her counseling degree. And so she's in private practice as a marriage therapist. Mm. We get to speak and write and do content together and podcasts. And it's so much fun getting to do that with her.
Yeah, love it. So fun.
God is always at work among us.
As the next gen pastor at New Life Church in Kearney, Nate gets to witness God move in the next generation. Last year, he started meeting with two college freshmen, and Nate was tempted to be discouraged.
It is a train wreck. It's not fun. These guys, very self-centered. I'm like, man, they need Jesus. These guys say that they're Christians, but man, they are just not getting it.
Then over Christmas break, there was a breakthrough. One of the students was in a dark place. As he wrestled with God, he was convicted that he either needed to give up the act or genuinely hand the reins of his life to Jesus. The decision he made changed how he lived. Returning to school the second semester, his college coach stopped Nate and asked what happened with this kid.
He's like, this guy was the biggest jerk on the team. He's the most arrogant guy. And this semester, he's like genuine, compassionate, caring for others, going out of his way to connect with guys. He's completely changed.
The student's conviction had led him to repentance and taking the final step of expressing saving faith.
And it's finally like, I just needed to surrender my whole life to Jesus and let him lead my whole life instead of me trying to have my own plan.
God in his kindness is on the move, transforming each of us and the next generation when we choose to walk with him in saving faith. God is doing something
right now. My Bridge Radio, celebrating God at work among us. Share your story and join the conversation in the Connect Now section at mybridgeradio.net.
You know, Greg, we hear a lot of things about the state of marriages today. plenty of it feels on the negative side. People not even getting married sometimes for much longer than they used to. You're very much on the ground in gauging people in marriage specifically. What is your sense of the state of marriage today?
Yeah. What's interesting, you know, COVID for all of us, you know, impacted us in a variety of ways. The way that I saw that COVID impacted marriage was that I think it shined a spotlight on all of our marriages. And it revealed things that we just have been really good at ignoring, burying, not dealing with, finding ways to distract through work and kids and hobbies and fill in the blank. The value was that it made probably all of us face some things that we just had been ignoring. And I know that was true for Aaron and I. We actually, during COVID, did telehealth, so video counseling with a great marriage counselor for our marriage, because we just realized, you know what, this issue we just haven't been dealing with, let's deal with it now. And so I think for a lot of couples, it allowed them to draw closer, to deal with some issues. Other couples decided, I don't want to spend my life dealing with the stuff that we haven't dealt with. And unfortunately, they made a different choice. But I think the good news is that I think a lot of marriages that face that, those issues are stronger now. My hope was that, you know, we all caught that year and a half of being quarantined and together and the benefits of slowing down. And yet, honestly, I think couples, families, people are more busy now than ever. You know, you hear terms like makeup travel. And so we're just, you know, we didn't get to do that. So let's, you know, go somewhere. And I think a lot of parents felt so guilty that our kids missed out on all, whatever opportunities are, that sports or education, whatever the opportunities are. I just hear a lot of parents going, man, I'm going to let my kids do, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 things. Maybe before COVID, it was only one thing. And I know Aaron and I have faced that. And so I think on one hand, for a lot of couples, healthier, I think more busy now, and you're starting to see the impact, the drift. I think that busyness just creates a drift to where we get involved in all this other stuff and we start to miss each other. So I think two things. One, we see a lot of worn out individuals inside of a marriage that aren't really doing a good job of being well cared for, so they don't have much to give. And then relationally, they're pretty disconnected, because I hear a lot of couples going, you know, I love her, I love him, committed, but man, I just feel like we're married roommates. And so that phrase, married roommates, we just hear that a lot. And it's unfortunate. I get it. And again, we're busy as well. But boy, if we're not being intentional in some important ways, it's easy to keep drifting and loneliness sets in. And man, it's not a good thing.
Yeah. Intentional. It's such a great word, right? So my wife and I co-host a premarital class 3 times a year in our church. And and a statement I make on one of the weeks, and I try to really drive home, is that which we did instinctively before marriage, we have to do intentionally after marriage, right? Yeah, so that whole
thing. I'm stealing that phrase. That's not mine. No, that's a great way to look at it. You're absolutely right. When I talk to couples around, let's say, communication, here's, I think, the reality is that it takes so much for us to run a family, run a marriage, manage all that it requires an unbelievable amount of communication back and forth, like between Aaron and I, who's picking the kids up here and who's taking them there and who's going to the store and who's paying bill, you know, just the kind of that administrative requirements to run a family, that's got to happen. But the problem is that sort of communication monopolizes most marriages, to where what they miss out on is the spending time really exploring the inner life. You know, how are you feeling? What are you stressed out about? What are you dreaming about? What's God doing in your life? I mean, those are the conversations that will never happen. All the other stuff, you know, who's doing what, you know, the tasks, those conversations will naturally happen because we have to just to manage. And yet, if we're not being, like you were saying, intentional about carving out a little bit of time, even every day, just to check in, hey, what was the high of your day? What was the low of your day? You know, what's God teaching you as of late? That kind of stuff, that'll never happen. And then what happens is we lose sight of each other. And that's when we feel like we are married to a stranger, because we're always changing. Yeah. And if we're not being intentional to keep current, and you know, I love that you remember the old rock group Journey.
Yeah.
So they had a great song called Faithfully. And in that, I think is one of the best marriage lines. It says that I get the joy of rediscovering you. And boy, what if that was one of our mottos in pursuits inside of our marriage, is that I get the joy of rediscovering you. In other words, I'm going to take time just to update. How are you doing? What's going on? Like, what's different now than maybe even yesterday or last week?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how the routine, our routine of life, which is right. The routine kind of overwhelms the relationship, right? So we spend so much time in the routine of life, because I think a lot of us think, and I think pretty much all of us unconsciously think, marriage is dating on steroids, right? So like we had all these experiences of just the two of us, we're talking, we're dating, we're spending inordinate amount of time and focus on each other. And then we're going to get married. And like, then we're not ever going to have to be apart. And like, it's going to be more focused on each other. It's like, no, actually it's less, because you were sprinting relationally in dating, spending way too much time and money and attention on each other. But now we flip it, and now we're in the marriage, in the routine, and all of a sudden we start spending far too little time on the relationship and the intimacy between each other.
And then add in kids, add in obviously jobs.
Yes.
And I've told my kids, because I want them to get this and understand this, and we tell our kids, listen, our marriage is the sun. You are the planets. You orbit us. We don't orbit you. This is not a child-centric home.
Love it.
Which means that we're going to take time away from you. We're going to take time apart from you. At the end of the day, we don't want to see you. We love you, but we want to see each other. Like when our kids were little, inevitably you've got the battles around, one more thing, one more drink, getting out of bed. Actually, my middle daughter, her name's Murphy, she was so clever. She'd get out of bed after I'd put her down and she'd come to me. I'm like, Murphy, why are you out? You get back to your bed. And she'd, give you those big old puss in boot, eyes. and go, Daddy, would you just pray with me one more time? How do you say no to that? Awesome. But what I would say is, honey, I will pray with you one more time. But because you're stealing time now away from me and your mom, that you're going to give me that same time tomorrow by doing a chore or sitting in time out. And they learned, seriously, they learned that's very awesome. Quickly that we were serious. Like at the end of the day, when we put you down, it's our time. Because otherwise it just won't happen unless we take advantage and recognize there's moments in our day that are sacred. Not every, if we have 1,440 minutes every day, not all those minutes are sacred as far as strengthening our marriage. But there are times, like right before bed, that's a sacred moment. Like we get to choose how we're going to use that. Are we going to sit on our phones? Are we just going to watch TV? Or are we going to take 10 minutes and, hey, what was the high of your day and the low of your day? Can I, let's pray together. That stuff doesn't happen on its own. Yeah. We're all good at just letting routine unfold, as you were talking about. And we end up feeling disconnected and like roommates.
Yeah, so good.
Listen for the difference, helping keep you connected to God and each other through life-giving messages, stories, and songs shared all day long on MyBridge Radio.
Greg, one of the things that we wanted to talk to you about today was expectations in marriage, right? So, Exactly.
We are all expecting, and I don't mean with a child. Yeah, we have lots of expectations.
Yeah, and it's a big impact, right? It's one of the things, again, I said earlier, my wife and I have been involved with premarital class in our church, and one of the topics we talk about is expectations because of the impact it has. So first of all, define expectation. When we're talking about expectations in marriage, what do we mean?
Yeah, I love James 4:1 says, what causes fights or quarrels amongst you? Is it not the desires that wage war within you?
Yes.
So I think part of that within a marriage, part of that desire is things that I hope will happen, that I think will happen, that I assume will happen, that I want to happen. For example, I mean, just a stupid expectation that I have is that my family members at home will when they leave a room, will turn the lights off. Like, I don't want to pay for, I'm sure it's not a lot of money, but I don't want, why pay? If you're not in that room, why am I paying for that electricity? Yeah. So my expectation is that my wife will not keep the lights on. Well, she loves to have literally every light on. If it's a lamp, if it's a, you know, one of the ones you plug in that just, you know, the night light, if it's an overhead light, I don't care what it is. She loves it. It creates a mood. Mm-hmm. A warm mood. I always tell her it creates a mood in me. That's anger and frustration. So if that's what you were going for me, well done. But it's again, we all have those little simple things that we expect will happen. I think and desire and want people to turn off lights. Now that's a simple, easy one. I mean, it can be, you know, that my expectation is that you're going to do, you know, all the work outside the home, or my expectation is you're going to do, you know, the work inside. If I'm doing outside, you're doing inside. It can be, you know, that we're going to discuss things before we spend, you know, certain level of money.
Yeah.
That we're never going to go to bed angry, that, you know, you won't ever be late without letting me know that you're not going to, you know, be here for dinner, whatever. But we all have them. And it's those desires that almost become demands. The difference between a request and a demand is a request knows an acceptable option. Mm-hmm. A demand is when I want it to unfold this way. Sure. And there's really no other way. And I promise we make under the guise of requesting, under the guise of a lot of our expectations, really what they are, these are demands. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, I think with expectations, two things. One, they're unspoken, most of them. Now, I've made my desire very clear about the lights, but you know, I promise I have plenty of others. We were driving the other day, my wife and I, and a guy cut me off. Well, I didn't do anything to compromise my integrity, but I did give him a very firm look, like, seriously, you know. But my wife corrected that behavior. And she said, please don't do that. Mm. You know, I don't know that person. I don't know are we just going to get shot now, or, you know, right. Is this going to turn into a fight? Well, to me, that felt very controlling. Mm. So behind that, though, is there was an expectation that she's not going to try to correct my driving. Mm. And so, I don't express that. So oftentimes they're unspoken. Maybe we're not even aware of them. You know, we've got all kinds of expectations from family, you know, just growing up in our family. So if I'm not saying it, then I don't know it. She doesn't know it. But then the other problem is that often they're unrealistic. There's something about what I hope will happen that probably my wife wouldn't agree to that anyway, but I'm still expecting that it'll happen. Mm-hmm. You know, a funny example. So please don't judge me. This was literally like the first or second week of our marriage. This really happened. So when I was growing up, my mom was a morning person. So she was always up early. And when I got up, magically, there was always this really nice, warm, hot breakfast, eggs, bacon, that kind of stuff.
Right.
I just thought that's what wives did to show love to their family. Like, I never thought about it. But when we got married, Erin is not a morning person. So, I mean, she was sleeping in, and in my mind, I was like, man, like, if I had done something, if I offended her, like, why is she not making me breakfast? again, I had no idea that that was my expectations because that's ridiculous. I mean, now as I say it out loud, I'm like, seriously, I'm not misogynistic. I mean, but that's what happened in my family growing up. And so I asked her, I said, "Here, are we okay? Are you mad at me?" And she went, "We're good. Why? Like, why are you asking that?" And I said, "Well, I noticed you haven't made breakfast at all in the morning." And she kind of went, "What are you talking about?" And all I said was, "Well, my mom," and I got the look of death from her. And in that moment, I realized, man, I had walked straight into what seemed like this was going to be a pretty bad situation. And so my wife, who has a great sense of humor, goes, "Here's the deal. If you want a hot breakfast in the morning, why don't you light your cornflakes on fire?" She was being playful, but her point was that that's not realistic.
It's not going to happen. She's not a morning
person. She wasn't willing to agree to getting up and cooking, but she's like, "You're an adult. You make breakfast for me. You know, bring me breakfast in bed." And so so as stupid or as funny as that example is, but what it did though, that's how we manage expectations. At some point, we've got to verbalize it. We've got to talk about, "Hey, when you leave a room, I would like you to turn the light off," or, "Hey, I would love for you to cook breakfast in the morning," or fill in the blank. Because then it allows our spouse to decide, is that something that they're willing to do? And actually, Aaron said, "Hey, you know what? Knowing that that is meaningful to you, if that's a way that I could show love to you, I will keep that in mind. And when I wake up, I mean, I'll cook breakfast every once in a while. That's fine." But she goes, "I'm really not going to do that every day." And I was like, "That's cool. Yeah, that was ridiculous." I mean, but we were able to negotiate then what was realistic to where that unrealistic, unspoken expectation became now more realistic between us. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to identify, man, what are those expectations that are leading us? Like I felt like in the car, I felt controlled. That led to an argument versus me being able to step back for a moment, go, "Okay, I'm feeling controlled. Why? Oh, because I expect that she's not going to correct my driving." Mm-hmm. Let me ask Aaron, "Hey, Aaron, when we're driving, I don't like that. I would expect that you're not going to correct me in the moment. Maybe wait later on." And then she said, "Well, if in the moment I'm not feeling safe, I'm going to say something." "Oh, yeah, that makes sense." We negotiated through that and found something that felt good to both of us. Mm. That's what we're trying to do with expectations.
Yeah, so good. Yeah. So obviously, like, expectations aren't all bad. You can have really good and right expectations, as we were just talking about a few moments ago. It's when they're unspoken or they're unrealistic. Sometimes you hit something that it's a spoken expectation and it's really reasonable. I think anyone would go, "That's not asking too much necessarily," but your spouse can't execute. Like, even they might even verbalize a willingness to do it, but they just keep not doing it at the end of the day. How they're wired, whatever. But it's something that's kind of, it really rubs you bad. Help us navigate that.
And so I think it's in those moments that we get to decide, is this a big deal or a little deal? Like, and I would say there are things in our marriage that when it's happening feels like a total loss for us. And that's when we need to be courageous enough to bring that up to our spouse and say, "I know we talked about this, but it's not happening, or it happened again. And that really feels like a loss for us. Could we really talk that through? Could we, you know, talk about how do we solve this again in a way that feels good to both of us?" If it's a little deal, man, that's the beauty. We get to give each other grace all the time as God's given us grace. And so I think when the expectations don't unfold as we thought we talked through and planned about, we just get to decide. Maybe this is a moment. Like, you know, the leaving the lights on, you know, I mean, I'd prefer that Aaron turned them all off like I want him to, but if she doesn't do that, I mean, I can give her loads of grace around that. It's not the end of the world. That's a little deal to me, you know, but if that became something that I went, that, you know, that really feels like a loss for me, then we owe it to our marriage. We owe it to each other to bring that up in a way of saying something like this, that I know you and I've talked about this, but it feels like a total loss for me. Could we sit down, talk this through and find something, a solution that feels good to both of us? because we are a team and we've got to figure that out. But we can't 24/7 deal with every little issue that's coming up. Right. That's not realistic. Yeah. And so we have to be willing to give that grace and just go, not a big deal, big deal, little deal. It's just, it's a little deal. And if that little deal becomes a big deal and it feels like a huge loss, then bring it up. But most of the stuff we argue about, you know, it's healthy to bring that stuff up. It's healthy to talk about it, to care about it, to me to listen to how that impacted Erin, for her to do the same thing. But most of that stuff, it doesn't require a solution. It really is more about just listening and caring. Yeah. And so I can't imagine existing in a marriage to where I thought 3 or 4 times a day, my wife is going to challenge or confront me about something or vice versa. I mean, it just, right. That feels so unsafe. It feels like I'm walking on eggshells. It certainly wouldn't connect us.
No. Yeah. I love what you're saying there, Greg. One of the ways I've thought about it over the years is I've hit those kinds of things in my marriage. So I had to ask myself, is whatever that right, agreed upon, but not fulfilled expectation, is that more important than the health of my marriage? Because at the end of the day, if I keep going after that with intensity, ever increasing intensity, I'm damaging my marriage. So what's more important, the lights being turned off, you know, or having a healthy marriage, you know? So whatever my thing is, like, what's most important?
And a deep belief that Erin has to matter in our marriage. There has to be room for her as well. So if her love is to have lights on, she's a part of this, an equal part of this marriage. Like, that has to matter. There has to be room for her as well. Mm-hmm. And that's why I want to keep challenging my own expectations to go, just because I think it should be that way, her thought and what she wants, that matters as much as mine do. So we'll figure out something that feels good to both of us. And we're a team. So, I mean, we try to function that way. The worst thing we can do is, hey, how I see it is right. As a matter of fact, what is it? Philippians 2:3. It talks about vain conceit and selfish ambition is what pride is. And so that vain conceit means that I think that I'm right. Like, I'm excessively proud of how I see it. I don't want to show up that way. That's not fair to her. Mm. It's okay. We can negotiate and talk through things and figure out ways that feel good to both of us and be a team that way. But at the end of the day, I mean, we've got to have an attitude that you matter. And there's got to be room for both of us inside of our marriage.
So good. Yeah. Well, Greg, we could go on and on and on and talk about it. Been a little bit this between the last time we had a conversation, but it won't be as long this next time.
Good.
It was a rich time, and look forward to doing it again.
Well, thanks. I look forward to. So thanks for letting me share from my heart. So I appreciate that.
The story about leaving the lights on, that one hit a little close to home. I really appreciate Greg's vulnerability and just sharing so many personal stories from his own marriage. What a gift he's given us by being so open that we can learn and do it differently in our own marriages. We're so grateful for those who have gone before us and desire to share. We really hope you enjoyed this conversation with Greg Smalley. We'll see you next time.